I am Dr. Tricia Peach. I grew up in a very small town in Wisconsin that most people have never heard of. Randy did. Siren, Wisconsin. Anybody heard of Siren? So it's right across the border. That's where I grew up. My dad was the pastor of the AG church there. It was a very small church, but I loved it. And I would spend my summers up at the summer camp. Mom and dad ran the AG summer camp that was up there, Assembly Park. One year, I was praying around an altar. I'm 8 years old, and God said, I want you to do children's ministry. And I was like, you bet, God, whatever you want. What's children's ministry? I had no idea. Our church, true story, we had a Sunday school class. Mavis Jonas taught that class. God bless her. She's 89, told the same story every week, but I never forgot it, ever. I miss her to this day. She was amazing. So I didn't know how to train for any of that. We didn't have that at our church. And so I would go up to the camps in the summer, and my parents would force me to clean the bathrooms and get the dead mice out of cabins, you know, that kind of thing, when you're the director's daughter. And I would offer, when the children's pastors came to do summer camp, I'd offer to carry their luggage or set things up for them if they'd teach me something. I just wanted to learn anything they could teach me, and then I would try that back at my home church. And when I was 15, I traveled with his dad, Chuck Pruitt's team. Loved it. I knew this is what God has called me to do. This is it. And there was no looking back for me. And my parents, God bless them, they were like, she's not going to change her mind. God, this is a call of God. They recognized that on my life, and they were very much for that. I came back, was doing children's ministry from then on. So again, small church. I was 16. I took over doing kids' church for our church. So we just had an adult that would stand up there. So, you know, it's legal or whatever. So the adult would stand in the back and make sure nothing was on fire. And myself and other teenagers from the youth group, we would do kids' church. And that's kind of where it went to. And then I went to North Central. I was there 4 years, graduated, went on the field doing kids' ministry. I was in Sheboygan, Wisconsin for 7 years. I was in Dayton, Ohio for quite a while at Christian Life Center. It's on the corner of 70 and 75, so it's hard to miss. It's a great big church there. I was there through their building program. That was interesting. So when I started in Dayton, I was the eighth children's pastor in 8 years. Warning, warning, warning. But I really liked the family life director I was working for. It was fantastic. And it very quickly, you can imagine this, okay, we started with 300 kids on a Sunday morning, and within 9 months we had 600. So you're trying to communicate with parents. It was kind of like I called the district to say, who can, you know, a larger church I can call to figure out what to do here. And they were like, well, there aren't any bigger ones. I'm going, oh, no. So you know what served me best was my experience from a church of 80 people, because the principles still would apply. So I went, all right, we're just going to have to figure this out. I would told my leaders and my staff, I'm like, it's like running downstairs in the dark, hoping you don't hit anything. Let's go. And they were phenomenal, and God helped them so much. But I can tell you right now, kids pastors are the most creative people I know. They do amazing things. They can make 5,000 loaves of goldfish crackers from little bitty budget. They can make this happen. You know, God uses them. So I did that for many, many years. I got to go to Swaziland, Africa, and South Africa for a little bit, and Bahamas. Of course, that was right after Dorian, so that was kind of, it was sad to be there, but it was also very amazing what God was doing. Came back, I got my master's degree from Bethel Seminary in St. Paul. Some of you might know that one. And I went back and got my doctorate from them in church leadership. So I had to pick a topic to study. So I was basically studying that throughout my master's and my doctorate. I picked a topic that I hope interests you as well. I wanted to know why 4 out of 5 ministry leaders quit before year 5. I wanted to know why. And the number one reason I kept getting, you know, people were guessing, they're like, well, it doesn't pay enough. That's why they quit. If you got in for the salary, you had the wrong guidance counselor. I don't think that that was why. I really don't. So I went in to do a deep dive, and I used North Central's numbers. I used Assemblies of God numbers because we had to narrow down our field of study. And if you are a pastor's kid or you've been in ministry for more than 5 minutes, you're probably going to guess quite a few of these, okay? But I wanted to know why, because what we were looking at, that 4 out of 5, these are not just random. These are ministry leaders that went to college, like Bible college, borrowed money for this. They felt like God called them to this, and then they quit before year 5. So if you've been in ministry more than 5 years, you're already one of the few, the proud, the veterans. Yes, you are a super trooper if you've made it longer than that. So I want to know why. Why are we having this problem? And this is a major shortage, by the way, and it's across the entire United States. I get calls all the time, we need a children's pastor over here. Like, well, you and everybody else. There just aren't very many. The year I graduated North Central, there were 18 of us. That was the largest graduating class in the history of North Central, and there were 226 churches on the waiting list. Those churches now have grown, so there's hundreds and hundreds on the waiting list, and I think last year for graduates, they had 2. There's something wrong. There's something we need to address here. So that was my course of study. Why? Why are we losing them? Because we need children's ministry leaders now more than we ever have. More than we ever have. The fields are so white to the harvest. The fields are just ripe for the harvest. Why are we losing so many leaders? Well, we're going to look at a few things from my slides. And I apologize if this gets to be, I always say this is a little technical, but stay with me. It's just a little bit technical because it was for these. This is, I printed my findings. It's technical because it had to be. Why does longevity in a position matter? Why does it even matter? Well, it takes about 9 months just to get to know a new church community. Okay, the average stay for a student ministries pastor is 9 months. They just barely got to know the community and they're gone. The average stay for children's ministry leaders is 3 years, so ours is a little bit better. But typically then when they leave, they never go back to ministry ever again. And that's terrible. And by the way, I have heard, well, if they left ministry, they just weren't called in the first place. I'm just going to tell you the truth. They probably got chewed up and spit out. It was not right. I do not believe that. I believe we have people that are being called but not equipped or put in where, not valued. Put it that way. It takes around 3 years at a church to enact any lasting change. Wow. So I've had many children's leaders tell me, Dr. Trish, nothing changes. It's all the same. Nothing's happening. I can't get anything to move in my church. We haven't grown. I can't seem to make anything change. How long have you been there? 9 weeks. 3 years. So unfortunately, the research shows that sometimes student ministry leaders are not there long enough to see lasting change. So longevity matters, being able to stay there. When I got to that church in Dayton, if you remember, the 8th kids pastor in 8 years, my boss told me something that at the time I hated. He said, you're not changing anything for the first 6 months. That was driving me insane. He's like, I want you to get to know the people. I want you to get relationships. I need you to understand the culture of the church. I was going nuts because I walk into kids' church and going, nope. Okay, no, that's got to go. And you know how we are. We see it and go, we got to fix that. We need to fix this. Nope. I was about to explode by week two. But he was right. He was right. And here's the thing. He said, we're going to make these turns. We're going to make them with excellence. And hopefully they'll come with you. He said, if you make that turn too fast and you lose all your good leaders, you failed. We don't want to do that. So I also love Andy Stanley does this thing where he says, a small church is more like a canoe or a kayak. You can make tighter turns easier when you're a larger church, more like the Queen Mary. It won't turn on a dime. It takes time. And then you have to pick your battles. I had to pick my battles. There were so many things I wanted to fix in 2 seconds, and I needed to one at a time and vision cast. Patience is not my strong point. So try to vision cast for that. Remember, it takes 3 years to enact lasting change. And isn't that what we're after? Lasting change in these kids? The average stay for a senior pastor at a church is 3 to 5 years. Youth pastors, 18 months. Children's pastors, 3 to 5 years. That is good. 3 to 5, at least it's better than some of the others. But the problem is when we lose those children's leaders, they often don't come back. And that's the part that breaks my heart because we need them now more than ever. Oh, my goodness. We have to reach this group of kids. So let's look at this next one. 4 out of 5 paid ministry staff leave ministry forever before they reach their 5th year. The majority of this group expected to be in ministry a lot longer or even for life. So they thought they were called, they went to school, they borrowed the money. In North America, 14 pastors quit ministry permanently every single day. That is a fact. Every single day. In the United States, the shortage of pastors only continues to get worse, with some pastors covering multiple parishes or putting off retirement. I heard an absolutely terrifying statistic from Chris that I'm going to butcher here. He was saying that way back when he first started his studies, pastors under 40 or under 45, 26% were under 40. Now it's 16%. You see what's happening there? 16% of our pastors are under 40. So a lot of these older pastors are staying way after they would normally retire because there isn't somebody there in the wings. Does that make sense? Okay, let's look at the next one. Why are record numbers? So I'm giving you the top five from my research, from my book. These are the top five reasons that pastors gave. So I surveyed AG pastors all over the United States, just wanting to know. Number one was burnout. Now, burnout, that can mean a lot of different things. Burnout, this is what I think about burnout. I think burnout is not you doing too much of everything you love. I think burnout is being stuck somewhere that is not your sweet spot, not what you're called to, and you're having to do that more and more, and not doing what you are called to do. I have never once had a kids pastor come to me and go, oh my goodness, we had 6 kids come to Christ this Sunday and 2 got baptized, I quit. That's not what stresses you out. That's not what burns you out. I was not burned out. Someday I'd be exhausted. We'd finish a VBS, have 1,500 people at that VBS, and I'm exhausted, let me tell you. And you know how it is the day before. We are never doing this again, ever. And just, where's that? Why is that broken? How did this sneak up on us so fast? We only had 12 months. I don't know. And then, of course, as soon as the VBS is over and all the kids leave, all of us are standing there. You going to start planning next year? Yep, let's start planning next year. Okay, what are we going to do? So you don't quit because you're doing the things you love. You're not quitting because you're succeeding in those areas. You're not quitting because you're shining in what God's called you to do. You get burned out when you're doing what you're not called to do. So for me, as I got in larger churches, I was more and more paperwork, Excel spreadsheets, more and more and more time on the phone. Okay, and this was funny too. I had somebody say, well, you don't know what it's like to have to get volunteers. We're at a really small church and we can't get volunteers. Well, the bigger churches and smaller churches, they'll fight over who has it worse. The bigger churches, you got to remember, we had 276 rotating volunteers. That is a lot of people that can call in sick that morning, right? That's a lot of people that could have car trouble. That is a lot of people who forgot to tell so-and-so that they were switching, right? So a lot of our Sunday mornings were like, oh, we'll put this here, we'll move that person there, call that person. Maybe she'll come in and do it for us one more time. It's a huge scheduling issue. So there's issues in smaller churches, medium-sized churches, large churches. All of them have to deal with volunteer issues. It's never over. So for me, I noticed the administrative stuff was burning me out. I was like, give me a mic and one of my ventriloquist puppets and let me go. You know, I want to get a room full of volunteers and get them revved up. We're going to have this dream. I would say, here's what we're going to do this next fall with the preschool wing, and it's going to be fantastic. And the administrative assistant is over there, and her eyes are getting big, and she's starting to hyperventilate, and I just hand her a pen, and she's taking notes. She's like, can we talk about this? Sure, sure. She's like, how are you going to pay for that? Details. Let's go. So we ended up hiring her on full time to be the tail on my kite. And that worked out really well. She's absolutely phenomenal. But you need to find out what specifically God's called you to do. And you should have some giftings in that area. So if God has called you to win American Idol and you can't sing, might have to ask for ID. So you need to think about, what am I called and gifted to? Because that's not what's burning you out. What burns you out is when you are stuck in what you are not gifted to do, what you're not called to do. So that's where I would find people who were gifted in those areas. So burnout, I'm just going to give you a great example of burnout. I had phenomenal preschool director. She was so amazing. Called to it. Loved those kids. 40 hours a week. The problem is we kept having to do babysitting for all of the events going on at the church. Actually, one of my biggest blog posts I ever wrote was on the dangers of too much church babysitting. It just like blew up my page. So we had them almost every night of the week. And as the church grew, it got worse. Everybody was demanding, you know, and they'd say, well, you're the children's pastor. It's your job. And I told the worship pastor, so you're going to come in and lead worship for all five of my kids' services? Great. He's like, no, I'm not. And I said, well, you're providing the people. Let's do it. He's like, no, you do the babysitting for my rehearsals. I was like, then you're going to provide the worship ministry for all my services. He didn't like that. So we ended up, I had to battle for that one, though, and what finally broke through, we had one more babysitting night of the week, and she came in, and she slammed down her resignation, and she put her head down on the desk and just started crying. And I went back for a 13th time to the pastor and the elder board to fight and say, this has to stop. We're losing really good people that are called to this. This has to stop. He's like, well, they won't come if there's not babysitting. And I said, who trained them that way? If you trained them one way, you can train them another. But keeping our quality people has to matter more. And I think it was on the 15th or 17th time, we won! And we didn't have to do any outside stuff except for like once in a while we'd have an all-church event. But we got to focus in on the midweek and Sunday, period. And I didn't lose any more staff. Because we had to put ministry before everything else. She burned out But not because she was doing what she loved, it's because she was being forced into the wrong position where she didn't need to be. Compassion fatigue, secondary PTSD. You're like, what is that? This is a fact. Pastors have the same stress level. There's a whole stress scale I talk about. Did you know you have the same stress score as ER nurses, as public school teachers? You know why? Because you deal with the public. You know what else? Because when people have tragedies, that's when we shine. That's when we're supposed to step up, right? And I didn't get that when I first went into kids ministry. I didn't get it at all. I was like, I can't wait. I want to do puppets. I'm going to do costume characters. I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun. And one of my very first reality checks was a young girl named Joyelle. I just prayed with her. I don't even remember what the thing was that we were doing. I was brand new in kids ministry. And she was trying to get a ball off the roof of the house, and she fell off and she hit her head. It was only from 10 feet, but she did not make it. And she was in the hospital a few days. And now I've got these kids in kids' church saying, tell me why. Where's Joyelle? Tell me why. Like, they're having to go to school with her the next day. All of a sudden, I realize this is not just about puppets anymore. This is not just about costume characters or curriculum. It just got real. And that was only the first of many times. I wish I could tell you that was the last one. It was not. I've had kids, why was my baby brother born dead? And I'd been in ministry maybe 15 years, and the associate kids pastor, we were best friends. My kids called her Aunt Sonia. She found a lump. It ended up being very aggressive. She lived about 13 weeks. Then we have these kids going, but Pastor Trisha, I prayed. Why didn't she survive? And at the funeral, oh my gosh, that was, oh, and who was asked to do part of the funeral? And I sat down and all the kids in kids' church came over by me, and part of it is they're asking why. So when people have their tragedies and they bring those in, there's a secondary PTSD that you carry. And it's not just physical exhaustion, it's mental, it's emotional. Like, I'd get home some nights, plop in the chair, and my husband's like, we should go out for Mexican and go to a movie and walk down the mall. And I'm like, I want to sit here and drool on myself and then crawl in a hole. This is my hole. I'm just going to stay in this hole. No people, you know, and I'm usually an extrovert, but I have nothing left. And then there's still people that think, you know, you sit around all day eating Tootsie Rolls some days, but not every day. Secondary PTSD is a real thing. Teachers end up with it, you end up with it, and it drains you. And I don't think others can understand unless they've been in ministry. And this includes your spouse and your kids. As much as we try to protect them, you know, they're part of that church too. And for what it's worth, pastors' kids have a much lower dropout rate. I thought about that for a while. I'm like, why do so many pastors and missionary and evangelist kids tend to stay in ministry longer? I think it might be because we hopefully are going in without the rose-colored glasses. That we knew we were suckers for punishment. We knew what we were getting into, and we're like, sign me up! But it does help us with longevity. It helps us kind of hold our ground if you know a little bit about what you're getting yourself into. Three was a surprise for me. A moral failure. There is a lot higher numbers of pastors who are addicted than you think. I was very surprised by that part of my research. And what's happening here, what it came down to, is the ministry fatigue, the PTSD, it's the burnout, the sadness. You have to find a way to cope with that. And there's good coping mechanisms, exercise, prayer, going and talking to somebody, and there's negative coping mechanisms. And those negative coping mechanisms can be eating an entire thing of Ben and Jerry's, you know, secret alcohol and drug addictions or porn or whatever it is. There's good coping mechanisms and there's bad. And unfortunately, we are losing a lot more ministers to those bad coping mechanisms. And it's sad because a lot of times if they do have a moral failure, they don't get back up. And that's a whole nother debate, which I talk about in here. Are we restoring leaders well? Are we restoring them biblically? All of that. Four, this one I kind of expected, a mental or physical health crisis. I know all of you know what's going on in here is eventually going to affect you physically. If you are in a high stress and you haven't found good coping mechanisms, it begins to affect you physically. Why do pastors, unfortunately, have some of the highest rates of diabetes and heart disease? Well, I think a lot of it is the stress, number one. Two, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but a lot of the pastors don't go to the doctor like they should. I don't know. They're like, I'm too busy serving Jesus. Well, you can serve Jesus longer down here if you go to the doctor and eat your vegetables. So the mental crisis is a big one, too. That's a huge one. Number five, the biggest, fifth largest, was family breakdown. This happened because usually whoever was the minister, and that can be the woman, too, is putting in so many hours, the family's feeling neglected, the marriage falls apart, and they are effectively out of ministry. This happens so often. It happens so often, and it's sad because it's the ministry. The ministry is everything, and they're not taking time to date anymore. They're not taking time to go out. They forget all the things that attracted them to each other in the first place. So your marriage relationship has to come above the ministry. It has to. This is going to sound very cold and callous. Ministry positions will come and go. All of them do come to an end. Your marriage is supposed to last for your entire life. And if you lose your family, my father always said, you know, what is it worth if you win the whole world and lose your own soul? And he said, if I win the whole world and I lose my own family. And he must have done something right. All four of us are in some form of ministry. And then Dad's like, which one of you is taking care of me in my retirement? We're like, we're all pastors, Dad. I told him it's his fault, so not one of us was a lawyer or a doctor, so he's going to end up in the camper out back, I don't know. We won't do that to poor Dad. Here are some risk factors that kind of show if a pastor might be this close to leaving the ministry. Okay, number one, loneliness and lack of support. This is a big one where pastors would and their wives would say, or their husbands, I'm lonely and I do not have any support. And they're surrounded by people all the time and very lonely because if you're not around people who understand what you're going through, and for some of us, oh boy, I had a few times where I'm like, especially when my kids were little, get out of kids' church and be like, I want to talk to an adult. Someone close to my age. My brain is turning into sludge. You know, I wanted to talk to other adults, and that's why these events are so important. You need to connect with other people who understand what you're going through. And loneliness comes in when you're just work, and you get home and you have like no energy left to go anywhere or do anything. I've said to other leaders, when you absolutely feel like not going anywhere, that's probably when you should. Force yourself to go be with a friend or a prayer partner or go to something like this. That loneliness is a big one. Unhealthy coping mechanisms, we talked about that. You will need coping mechanisms to deal with stress, but you need to think to yourself, is this beneficial or not beneficial or neutral? I think turning Teletubbies on for hours and hours is not beneficial. It's going to push you over the edge. But if you, for me, I found some things where sitting in the sun was good, going for a walk, watching some things that uplift me. Lack of accountability, this is a big one. This is a big one. Oh my goodness, so many pastors have gotten in trouble recently for money stuff. And they'll say, I don't want to turn in the receipts. Why won't they just trust me? This is such a pain in the neck. Don't they see I'm trying to do ministry here? Those treasury and finance people are going to be saving your butt if there's ever an accusation. They are, I know it's an annoyance. It's like, I got 500 boxes of gummy worms for the challenge at Dollar General. Why do you need the person? It's important. Accountability protects all of us. High conflict. I know none of you have ever gone through this at a church before. I was interviewing this young lady that wanted to be an administrative assistant, and she said, I just want to work here because it's a church, and we all, you could just pray all day, and everybody's hugging. We did not hire her because I did not want to destroy her view of the church. Very nice girl. But there is conflict that happens in the church, and unfortunately, where you are at is at extreme high risk. You know why? Because you're dealing with people's kids. I think it's worse than any other area. Do you see people get that worked up about the parking lot? There's a crack! I parked here all the time, and now it's crack. Oh, no. But they will. I said, no red dye 40. No red dye 40. Makes them hyper. I had a mom, they can't go to this winter camp unless you sign a thing saying they will not see anything related to Disney. How am I supposed to stop that? Disney t-shirts? Oh, I told her, no, I'm not going to sign. And she's like, I need to sign it that they will not get any sugar of any kind. I told her, I said, they're going to have so much sugar. It is like out of control everywhere. Five, no boundaries between work and home. This is hard for me, okay? This is hard for me because ministry's not a job. It becomes your life. But if you don't have boundaries between church and home, it will begin to destroy your marriage. It will begin to destroy your relationship with your kids. It will begin to destroy you because you don't have that downtime. Okay, and in a very large church, what I had to do, this is going to sound terrible, I changed my cell phone number and I gave it only to the administrative assistant because I knew I could trust her if it was a real emergency. Right? Not, my daughter didn't get the solo in the Christmas production and I want to talk to you right now. That is not an emergency that I needed to be hauled out for at 10:30 at night. So if she has that and nobody else does, I could have real things like vacations. And for my day off, I literally would drive to this mall that was 40 minutes away called The Green out in by Dayton. And I'd be out there with my kids most of the day having fun. So I wasn't home because they knew where I lived. They would find me. Yeah, so you have to have boundaries between work and home. And I think just as you get older, you get better at that, hopefully. High level of enmeshment, that means you don't have any separation between work and home. There is just church. Church is family, church is everything. The problem with that is if you ever switch ministries or go to a different church, instead of, it's not like just leaving a job. Your whole life is now on upheaval. You just lost your friends, your place of worship, your job, everyone you ever talked to. It's not like leaving just a regular job. It's completely different. That enmeshment, you got to put some boundaries in there. You need to have some boundaries in there. Termination. More pastors are getting fired now than ever in North American history. I don't know why. One of the key reasons was they were hiring a pastor, but they expected them to be highly skilled in administrative and business skills. And what are we trained to do in Bible college? Preach. learn the word, right? And then they're like, great, now fill out this Excel spreadsheet and we want you to be organized on this. And some of these pastors are like, I have no idea how to do any of this. By the way, I love this. So many children's pastors have no background in children's ministry. Did you know that? So a lot of them have no background in children's ministry. And I legit ran into this lady not that long ago. And she's like, thank you so much. You know, I was reading your book on how to launch a children's ministry. I don't have a degree like every other children's ministry leader. So I just feel like I just am not qualified and I don't know what to do. And God should have called somebody else. And I'm just holding the line until they get a real children's pastor. Like, good news and bad news, it's you. So she's like, I have no children's ministry experience. And I said, well, what do you have from your experience from your other jobs that you can bring to bear? She said, nothing. I have nothing that's useful, you know, except running my own daycare all those years and being a recruiter for this and, oh, and being a pediatric nurse. But besides that, I have no experience that would be relevant. What she meant was, I don't know all the Bible stories yet. You know, I don't know all the theology. But what they were looking for at her church was exactly what she brought up to the table, was the administrative. See? And that's not always what we have, what we were trained for. Lack of relevant training. You're going to laugh because this was a very long time ago, but when I went to North Central, I was a very young kid. I needed money, came from a poor pastor's family. I worked security at Mall of America. Why? Money. Paid very well. And I was the only female on staff most of the time, and I loved the job. I got to talk to people from all over the world. I did not think it was going to help me in children's ministry at all. It was just for money. That's it. What were my duties? I had to recruit new security officers. I had to train them. I had to fill the 23 door positions. If somebody called in sick, I needed to put somebody at that door. I was in charge of the training, making sure we kept the legal things. If you'd asked me then, I would have said, that has absolutely nothing to do with children's ministry. God knows what he's doing. God will pull in everything you've done in your all of that secular work. It's exactly right for the position you're in. God will leverage that. I always say, no. Don't say you have nothing to bring to the table. God has already given you stuff. You're just not recognizing it. And unrealistic expectations. That's the whole, they're going to be hugging all day. It's going to be great. People are going to be lined up to volunteer in the preschool room. No one's ever going to bite anybody in there. Unrealistic expectations. So let's look at the next one. Warning signs that a pastor may be about to leave ministry, okay? Shallow affect. They no longer care if programs are going well or not. So just so you know, this is a big warning sign. So this would be you had a very successful VBS. All these kids came to Christ, and you do not care. This would be a kid comes up and tells you, Jesus did this in my life and answered my prayer, and nothing in you is responding. That's a very bad sign. That is a sign of extreme burnout, and you've got to listen to that. You need to listen. It doesn't make you bad. It does not make you a bad person. That's a warning light going off, going, uh-oh, something's not right here. Lying, sneaking, hiding things, gaslighting to just keep going. This is so you don't have to address it or make any changes or try to fix any of it. Just keep going. Survival mode. By the way, that's not a good ministry strategy. Survival mode. You're not going for growth there. It's not going to end well. Increasing use of unhealthy coping mechanisms. Not good. That's a bad sign. Emotional outbursts at inappropriate times that the pastor can no longer control. Crying, anger, major health breakdown. Okay, this is one I have seen happen more than once where they stuff it down and they stuff it down and they stuff it down and then somebody will say, The paper towel thing is out in the bathroom. What do you mean by that? So what's happening there is those emotions are going to come out. You can't stop that. Your emotions are not bad. They're there to protect you. And again, that's a sign. It's saying something's wrong here and it needs to get fixed. And you got to listen to that. I've had it happen where I'm talking to a children's pastor and we're talking about moving books and just spontaneously she starts crying. It wasn't really about the books. And I'd ask, why are you crying? I don't even know why I'm crying. And then we talk about it. Her emotions are trying to tell her something's wrong. You can only stuff it down for so long, it's going to start coming out. And for some pastors, it starts coming out at very bad times. I was one pastor that I knew. He wasn't my senior pastor, but he started having these angry outbursts that the church people began noticing. He was under so much stress. He was under extreme high stress, and it was getting to the point where he couldn't hide it anymore. You can only hide it so long, and he was starting to lash out, and that was a sign. Five reasons to not quit. So you're all like, well, now I'm depressed. No. Because I have good news. I wanted to get into the nitty-gritty of why this is so important. Okay, I wanted to go right to the heart of why this is such an important topic. Why should you not quit today? Okay, there's a lot of good reasons. Number one, the grass is not greener. You've heard this one before. I've heard kids' pastors say, well, if I was just in a big church, we wouldn't have these problems anymore. And then some of them will say, well, I'm sick of the bureaucracy at the big church. I'm going to go to a small church, the smallest I can find, and then everything will be just great. There can be bureaucracy at a very small church. There can be, oh yeah, there can be problems. Any size church has its problems. You just don't know it yet till you're there on staff, right? So the grass is not always greener. By the way, I always say this to when I've got students. I say to them, don't have an exit plan for when things get too rough. If you have an escape hatch, an exit plan for when things get too rough, you will use it. You can't say, if this gets difficult, I'm going to go do this, because then you'll be one of the four out of five, because it is going to get that difficult. But God will get you through it to the other side, and just moving over to the church across town may not be any better. You could go from the fire into the fry pan, not always greener on the other side. I'm not saying you shouldn't go if it's a terrible situation, but I'm just saying, if God's called you there and you have not felt that calling lift, then it's not going to be better somewhere else till God calls you somewhere else. Number two, you are still called. Some of the most miserable people I have ever met in my entire life are those that are called to ministry but are not doing ministry. They're the most cranky, unhappy, because they're not doing what God called them to do. So no matter what they're doing, they're unhappy at it. My grandfather got asked by the district to pastor this church of all retired pastors. He said it was horrible. Absolutely horrible. Because it was like, 150 retired pastors, and they're all elderly, and they all want to preach. And they all would have done it better than you. And they all have an announcement and a testimony. And he took that for less than a year and was like, no, because the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. They're irrevocable. It doesn't go away. I mean, even my grandfather, when he was like 80, we'd go to a church and they'd say, oh, give a testimony, Brother Jim. And I'd go, oh no, here we go. And I'm talking at least 30 minutes. They'd have to wrestle the mic away from him. It doesn't go away. You are called. And I think what happens is, if someone doesn't value you, they don't see your value, then you figure your calling's been gone away or something. I had a revelation on this early in my ministry. I had a supervisor just for a short amount of time. Thankfully, he wasn't in ministry for a while. He said, if you don't start doing this like I'm doing it, your career in ministry is going to be over. Your days of ministry are over. And I thought about that for a minute. And I was thinking back to when I was 8 years old at that altar at the camp, when God's like, I want you to be a children's minister, and that God didn't turn around and go, is that okay with you? Are you sure? Oh, I'm sorry, he's not good with it. No. So sometimes you're going to have parents that don't see your worth. You're going to have church people that don't see your worth. They think you're babysitting. You might even, from time to time, have a spiritual leader who does not see your worth. I showed a little video clip to our kids' church on Sunday. A lady, she bought a $13 ring at a garage sale. 30 years later, she got it appraised. It was like $30 million. Yeah, 24-carat diamond. And she'd been wearing it all that time. Didn't know what she had. And some of you guys, your pastor doesn't know what he has. That doesn't change what you're worth. I would say a whole lot of churches, they don't know what they have. Doesn't change what it's worth. So even if a pastor says, well, you're doing all of it wrong, dismisses you, God doesn't, and God sees it. God still has a plan for your life. And honestly, there's times that God just says, I'm moving you over here. And then you still have to be faithful to God and do what God says. The hard part is getting some of those words out of your head and not seeing yourself like some other people see you and trying to see yourself the way God sees you. I think if you've been hearing that for too long, it's hard to get out of your head. Then you need to fill yourself with the word. You need to be around people that understand. Just because somebody else doesn't see your value doesn't mean God doesn't see your value. He knows your value. You're always going to have that parent that does not get what you do, or grandparent, or even a volunteer. Oh, I could do this easy. I've been teaching this forever. What do you do all day? Sit with your feet up on the desk. They don't understand what it is you do. Does not change your value one bit. Not at all. You will reap a harvest. The Bible says that if we sow, we will reap a harvest. It just may not look like what you thought it would look like. All my years in Sheboygan, the kids that I thought were going to go on and be pastors, I'd say maybe half of them did, and half of them fell away from the faith entirely. And then there were these kids that sat there and never said anything that I was like, well, I don't know if they heard a word I said, that are off pastors and totally on fire for God now. You're not seeing the harvest. You don't see that at the beginning. That comes way later. God didn't call you to go pull a plant out of a seed. He just called you to be faithful. You're supposed to do what God called you to do in that space, whether or not anybody sees the value of it, including you. I would have been so wrong had I tried to tell you. I would have been like, this kid and this kid, wow, they're going to be such great pastors. Nope. And I was like, those three stare at the entire time and they never heard a word I said. They're going to have great careers as, I don't know, telephone poles. They just sit there. They were listening. Because they're on fire for God now, so you don't know. You're not a fortune teller. You can't predict that. You just have to be faithful. Okay? God's definition of success is so different from ours. So if I have a room with 600 kids on a Sunday morning and not one of them ends up following Jesus, and they're like, her puppets were cool, I failed. I wasted that opportunity. You know the stats. We get 52 hours with kids a year, but you don't really, because really they only come about 2 weeks out of every month. And if they've got a custody situation, it could be one time a month. And then you have all the holidays thrown in there. So really, you can guesstimate maybe you might get them 20 hours a year. And I've already heard the negativity. Well, the parents have them all that long time and we only have them 20 hours a year. God can do more in 5 minutes than the world can do in 20 hours. God can meet those kids and change their lives more in 5 minutes with you sitting and talking to those kids than them being in school 8 hours a day. I've watched God change kids' lives in a moment. Don't underestimate the power of the moments you have with those kids. You have an advantage. I know they're on a screen all day, but a screen can't give them a hug. And a screen cannot answer their questions. You're sure AI can, but it's way off quite a lot of the time, right? And doesn't care about them. Doesn't tailor make a service for them. See, I don't know the culture at your church. You do. And that's the problem. See, if I go in there and I just play something on a video or read it out of a book, I could go over to Russia right now and scream at a bunch of kids in Chinese and then go, well, it's not my problem. I did what I was supposed to do. I told them the lesson. Bye. It's about communicating where they are and where they're at. So you have to know the language. You have an advantage over any screen. And the biggest advantage you have is the power and the presence of God. That's something they won't get anywhere else. I remember my mother saying to this little girl that would come in, she was dirty. Her mom was an alcoholic. She was always filthy, didn't smell so great. And my mother asked her one time, she said, you never have your verses learned. You don't know any of the stuff for the Bible challenge. Why are you always here? And she said, this is where I get my hug for the week. And that's enough. That can be enough. You are so needed right now. I read an article, and it was in a secular news source, and they were bemoaning that for the first time in American history, Christianity didn't keep going down. Like the number of Christians, I've heard that for years, that the number of Christians has gone down, 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 down. And the number of those that don't believe has gone up, 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 up. Right? You've probably heard that. That has run into a wall with Gen Z. Gen Z, it has stopped, leveled off. And in this, they were saying that was so sad because so many were turning back to ancient beliefs and exploring what their families had believed. And I see in Gen Alpha, this youngest one, a hunger to know. And they want to know God and they want to be a part of something and they want to do. I'll say, hey guys, we're all going to go clean up this park across the street. They're like, great, let's go. And it's something they're doing. Not on a screen. You have the advantage there. You are so needed right now because the fields are white to the harvest. Let me tell you, I've watched our pastor in our church trying to get people to come to the altar and trying to get people to come to the altar and trying to get, you know, Jesus said, go out into the highways and byways and compel them to come in, right? Altar time ninjas, compel them to come in. But with kids, he says, don't hinder them. Let them come to me. Because basically you open it up and they're like, you get to throw those nets off on the other side and they are full to the bursting. Who cares if nobody sees the value of that? God sure does. God does. And I'm one of them that I was a kid in a church and I had a teacher that told me the same Bible lesson every week, but I knew she loved me. I knew she loved me. You are so needed. I'm going to close with this. It's an example from Scripture of somebody that quit. And it was Elijah. He's one of my favorite characters in the Bible. I love telling that when kids' church. He is one of my favorites. But I think people get some of that whole story wrong. You remember he's 3 years sitting out in the desert because Jezebel's trying to kill him. Jezebel's crazy. She's trying to kill him. He's sitting out in the desert. God feeds him by ravens. Remember that part? So he's getting his food from the ravens. He's drinking water from the brook. And the 3 years is going by, and he's thinking, God, get me out of this. God, get me out of this. I want to get out of this. And he thinks, one day, God's going to get me out of here, and Jezebel's going to get it. And the whole country's going to see God and show up, and this is going to be so amazing. Well, the 3 years, the water dries up. Now he has no water in the brook. God says, it's time. And Elijah's like, that's it. It's the moment. Yes. Woohoo. So after 3 years in this desert under one palm tree, he gets to go in there, and everything he hoped for happens. Everything and then some. All 400 prophets of Baal are there. Their God doesn't answer. You guys have told the story a million times. Elijah, he's so great. In the original Hebrew, it's so great. He's like, I think your God's on the bathroom, on the toilet. He's indisposed. I think you guys should cut yourselves more. Yeah, don't tell that part to the kids. I think you guys should cut yourselves more. I think your God is deaf. Maybe he can't hear you. He's just having a great time. And then his prayer is, you show them whose God is God. Fire comes down, burns up the whole altar, the dirt, the sand, everything, the water. And he'd thrown all the water left in the city on there too, by the way. And then he said, kill all 400 prophets of Baal. And the people kill all the prophets of Baal. And all the people are dropping down going, your God is God. Your God is God. And he's like, now the whole country's turning back to God. And that's where we stop with the kids. Don't tell them about killing the prophets of Baal either. But at that moment, Jezebel, who's still very much alive, promises she's going to kill him. She comes after him, and with nowhere else to go, where does he go back to? And I keep hearing, I heard one pastor say, well, Elijah just was so burned out because of all the things that happened, the fireball from heaven and outrunning the chariot. He was just so exhausted and burnt out. That's not why he was upset. He was fired up, all right. He was like, yeah, outruns the chariot. That's not why he wanted to quit. No. 3 years he waited in that desert. He probably had that palm tree named. And he's right back where he started, waiting for the ravens to bring him food. And he says, I can't do this again. God showed up in a big way, and nothing changed. Not even for Elijah. And he throws himself down under Bernard, or whatever he named that tree, and he's like, I'm done. I quit. I'm not doing this anymore. I want to die. Thank God for unanswered prayers. He prays to die, and the ironic part here is he's one of only two in the whole Bible that doesn't get to die. God's like, psych, not ever going to die. So he doesn't get to, but he asks to die, and this tells you how bad it is, because the angel shows up, and the angel, usually in the Bible, they're like, fear not. So Elijah wakes up, rolls over and eats, rolls right back over and goes right back to sleep. He's just like, yeah, angels, I've seen them. I don't care. I want to die. And this happens three times. Three times. I think if I were the angel, I'd be tempted to be like, get up. But he doesn't. And then he says, the journey's too long for you. You need to go up to this mountain. So he goes to the mountain of God. You remember that. God does all these huge miracles, but God's not in the miracles. And then there's a still small voice. Elijah, what are you doing here? And he fires out. You can tell he's rehearsed it 100 times. Well, Jezebel's going to try to kill me, and I'm the only prophet of God left, and they all just want to kill me. And God says to him, I have plenty that I've reserved that have not bowed the knee to Baal nor kissed him. And then he ignores everything about Jezebel still being alive and goes, all right, so here's your next job. Here's what we're going to do. I need you to go anoint the next king. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to give you a helper, so go anoint him too. God doesn't always answer our questions. You say, God, why? Why is that person so horrible and they get away with it? God, I want answers. Why didn't this work out? Or we had the best blowout rally we've ever had and it was so incredible. And I'm right back where I started. What's going on? And so a lot of times, you know what God will do? Yep, that's hard. Okay, so here's the next thing I need you to do. And after that, I need you to do this. And I think it's because it would take so long for God to explain it to us. We would be in heaven for 40 years. And he's like, you're just going to have to trust me. This is the next thing you need to do. He didn't explain anything to Elijah. Because Elijah's like, Jezebel just said this about me. Jezebel's trying to kill me. And he's like, uh-huh. Yep, she sure is. So, I need you to go anoint Elisha. And I need you to go anoint Jehu. This is what I want you to take away from that. When he wanted to quit, God did some things for him. Number one, God made him eat. Amen. God said, you're going to get up, you're going to eat, you're going to eat good food, drink your water, stay hydrated, folks. God's going to say, you need to eat, take care of yourself. He had him nap. Amen. Some of y'all need to sleep. You don't get enough sleep. And then he gave him the next assignment because you're still called. You still work for God. You don't work for anybody else. You work for God. So that's what God's going to do when you go to him and you say, God, this is horrible. He's going to understand. He's going to comfort you. He's going to tell you to take care of yourself. And then he's going to tell you what your next assignment is. And you're going to say, all right, whether you give me the answers, God, or you don't, I'm yours. And those are the 20% that end up staying. If you have to have an answer for everything, I think of it like my little son when he was two and I'm trying to give him his vaccinations. And I couldn't tell him, it was just a little bit of this type of varicella and they're putting it in you and it's going to build your immune system. He doesn't understand that. He just knows, ah! So I tell him, I love you, you got to trust me. And we're saying, ah, ministry's hard. And God's like, I know. I'll explain it later. You got to trust me. So I want to close in prayer. And I have my research up here. It's very detailed. We'll put it that way. But in my heart, what I really want is to pray for all of you. If you're feeling disheartened, if you're feeling like throwing yourself down under a Bernard and just rolling over, you need to take some time away with the Lord at the mountain, whether anybody else sees your worth or not. Take care of yourself. And remember, you're called. It's his mission, not yours. Just be faithful. You don't see the results yet. You may not this side of heaven. Let me pray for you.